Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Excited to be here with you, as always, this Wednesday, September 3rd. Matt, there is a whole lot going on in the city of Tucson this week, and it's looking like we're going to get some serious rain, huh?
Well, if Lorena makes the cutoff at the Pacific Ocean and heads this way like it's supposed to, yes.
You know, I pause a lot when I think about these tropical storms and their effect on Tucson's weather over here, because as you may or may not know, I had a restaurant for many years in San Carlos, Sonora,
yes.
Mexico, before we opened up Union Public House. And we had a pretty good thing going on there in San Carlos until one of these tropical storms, and this was September 3rd and 4th, 2009, Hurricane Ximena ripped through San Carlos before making its way to drop a lot of rain in Tucson and absolutely decimated our business and our home. The average annual rainfall in San Carlos is actually a little less than what we get in Tucson over here. They say somewhere between like 3 and 15 inches a year, but let's call it 8 to 9 inches a year.
Okay.
When this particular tropical storm, which wasn't even a hurricane, right? This tropical storm Ximena made its way into the Sea of Cortez. It parked there in the middle of the Sea of Cortez for about 36 hours, picking up that moisture from the 90-degree water and that hot, humid air. And we got over 43 inches of rain in 36 hours, right? 43 inches of rain. So basically 4.5 times our annual rainfall in just a little more than a day. And of course, the washes and things in San Carlos flooded out. It destroyed my self-storage business. It wrecked our home. I mean, people died in this storm.
Yeah,
right? There were over 200,000 homes damaged to a point where people couldn't live in them anymore in Mexico in general, between Baja California, Norte, Sur, and of course, Sonora. And so these storms that often give us this weather here in Tucson, that are nothing more than the remnants of these tropical storms or depressions that have long since broken up over the mountains in Nogales, actually can cause a lot of devastation down there in Mexico. And this one just absolutely crippled us. However, I do think that this was a real pivotal point in my life, where when we got kicked that hard in the ground, we were able to pick ourselves up off the mat and wipe the blood off our chin and rebuild our lives. It's kind of how I ended up here in Tucson. If it wasn't for that particular tropical storm, we probably wouldn't have Union Public House or Reforma or Proof, the restaurants in St. Philip's Plaza, the Maverick. All of these things came from, quite frankly, one of the most devastating experiences I've had in my entire life. Like, from the ashes rose up our businesses here, because we were able to adapt, to pivot, and I hate that word sort of post-COVID, but we were able to really find a way to overcome what was a real, real big tragedy in our lives at that particular time. And so I always reflect upon that right around September 3rd and 4th, because for me, it's been 16 years now since that storm. And for us, it was a real pivotal point in our lives. And I'm just really blessed to be here and excited to be here with you guys this morning after such a devastating experience. Now, what we also got to see this week was something on a more positive note, was the U of A football season returning, right? Bringing all kinds of action into Tucson. Those that had the opportunity to go down to the stadium, maybe they got a chance to see that new Bear Down Bash that's happening on the Bear Down Field just north of the stadium. Yeah, it was great. Drew Cooper was playing over there. They've got a full concert schedule. So pretty much every week there's going to be some sort of artist playing. And it starts 3 hours before kickoff. And their own little separate tailgate over there. Everyone thought that maybe this was going to cost money because there was a VIP section that included some food. And I think it prevented a lot of entry into that area. But quite frankly, it was not only free, it was a great time. It was a great setup. And I think it would be a great experience for you football fans if you want to get out there and see that game this weekend, this Saturday night against Weber State. It's a 7 p.m. game. It's only on ESPN Plus. It's not on regular ESPN over there, so you've got to have a streaming service. So this might be a good opportunity to not watch that game at home and either go to your local sports bar or perhaps go down to the stadium and check out that Bear Down Bash over there. DJ Jason Arizman is playing this week. Gigi and the Glow is playing in the next week on that Kansas State game on Friday. And on Saturday, October 4th, they're going to have Roger Klein and the Peacemakers.
Oh, my goodness.
This is a free concert.
Yeah.
This is pretty awesome. I mean, we were doing events with Roger Klein a couple years ago at the Rito Downs that were like big money tickets, you know, big charity event, thousands of people draw to this, and it's going to be free.
It's going to be a rocker.
So very, very cool opportunity. Get out there and support your local University of Arizona Wildcats. As football season starts off, we're seeing a lot of action in the restaurant business for fantasy drafts. This is like a whole new category. This did not exist a decade ago in my career. There are people that now book private rooms and private areas and set up their draft boards and use the Yahoo platform or these ESPN platforms for the fantasy drafts. And this is a thing in the restaurant business now. We had three fantasy drafts alone on Monday out there, and I thought that was pretty funny. Now, we're not going to talk fantasy football over here on this show, but I was thinking one day Matt and I could do a whole show on a fantasy draft of perhaps, like, say, local politicians over here. We could take the Board of Supervisors and the, say, mayor and city council, draft our own fantasy politician teams over here for the Morning Voice.
I'm here for it. I am here for that.
I feel like this could be a whole great show. We're going to have to talk about that and do our own fantasy draft, I think, at some point for local Tucson politicians. This sounds like a rockin' good time.
Yeah, it does. We were out this weekend and we happened to see a movie over at a Roadhouse over at the old Crossroads, Grant and Swan. And we saw a bunch of guys sitting around a table in the bar there, in the front where you walk in, and they all had their laptops, and I said, that's got to be a fantasy football thing. I don't know if you know this, but our own Ted Maxwell was part of one of the very first fantasy football leagues ever in the country, his involvement is in the early 80s, but the league itself dates back to, like, I think he said 78.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Were they, like, writing their picks on papyrus over here and then getting the results like four weeks later after somebody did the math on their abacus?
I'm guessing there may have been some Olympia beer or a Falstaff or hams consumed at those early ones. But he said it was probably Coors because it was originated in Colorado Springs. So that was kind of a neat little factoid from General Maxwell earlier. Oh, actually, that was last week we talked about that. So I think he's off to the draft. Might have been last weekend or this coming weekend.
Oh, it's got to be this week because the games actually start tomorrow, Matt. So you got to get those fantasy picks in over there. And for those sports establishments that have something like the NFL ticket right now, you know how much the NFL ticket cost for Union Public House?
I'm going to get, is it in the five figures?
Yes.
So I'll guess 10,000 to get the ball rolling.
So to get something like this for your house is it's around $400, right? Like $379 for an amateur subscription. But for a bar the size of the Union Public House or the Maverick, it's about $19,000 a year.
Yeah, well, because you can probably sell a lot of beer and jalapeno poppers and whatever else people consume while they're watching football.
Without a doubt. It's over $1,000 per Sunday when you think about there being 17 regular season games. And that ticket really is only good for the morning games, right? That 10 or 11 o'clock start when you've got 10 or 11 games going on, 9, 10 games going on simultaneously. The afternoon normally only has about 3.
Okay.
And you're going to get one on CBS and one on Fox anyway.
Yes. Yep.
So the ticket's adding a little incremental value, but it's really for that morning game slot over there that brings all the value.
Stuck up on
to
celery
local,
and Worcestershire sauce.
Without a doubt. Also on the news this week, the Star Village solution still being proposed by the city council to house at least 25 unhoused individuals, right, at the 6th and Grant intersection over there. This makes absolutely no sense. I feel terrible for the residents in that particular area. I'm not normally a not in my backyard kind of person, but quite frankly, I could see why this would be upsetting in somebody's backyard to have a midtown homeless encampment built in a neighborhood that you didn't see this one coming. And I'm thinking a solution to this one could be something far more simple. You know, the unannexed land that is Project Blue right now, we could make Star Village down in that neck of the woods, down by the state prison system somewhere over there, there would be far less people complaining about an encampment not in their backyard in this unused land rather than being at Grant and Six.
Sure. I keep looking back to Estevan Park, where there was a kids' activity center right next to it, and parents and children had to view the aftermath of stabbings and all sorts of bad behavior. And I just think of, if you set up something like this, how are you going to police it? How are you going? What sort of, we keep using the phrase meaning the city keeps using the phrase low barrier or no barrier. You do have to have some structure in order to keep the surrounding area safe and keep the people safe from each other.
Without a doubt. It's going to be a real challenge for sure to see how this development pans out. There's already rumors and discussions of lawsuits happening in other states where developments like this have occurred, and the associated problems, suits over ADA access, suits over all sorts of facilities, rats, and you know whether there was proper running water, and all kinds of problems. And I can just see this one coming, the storm clouds, so to say, in the future. And we're not talking about the rain that's going to hit us tomorrow or the next day. We're talking about lawsuits raining in on the city of Tucson. But when we speak of fantasy drafts, I also think of fantasy drafts of great new restaurants that have opened up in Tucson. And we come back after the break, we're going to bring on a budding young restaurateur over here that's opened up a great new Latin fusion restaurant downtown. Zeus Sains, owner of Taboo Latin Fusion, coming up after the break. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger on 1030 AM The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. You know I'm a big fan of local restaurants and local entrepreneurs, business people going out there and taking that risk, often putting their life savings on the line to bring you a delicious meal or a great happy hour special. And I've got somebody live in studio that's the owner of one of the hottest new restaurants in Tucson. Give a big welcome to Zeus Sains, owner of Taboo Latin Fusion Restaurant here in downtown Tucson. Good morning, Zeus.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for coming on The Morning Voice with us to talk about Taboo over here.
No, thank you for the invitation.
Why don't you start by letting our listeners know where Taboo is located?
Well, Taboo is located downtown, right in front of what used to be Sandrock. The address is 128 East Congress.
Okay. And that was, if I remember correctly, a former Gus Taylor location, right?
Correct.
And so you guys did a transformative remodel on that space.
Yeah, we have to do pretty much everything. Plumbing, AC, bathrooms, everything.
So let's talk about that for a moment, right? Do we discuss how expensive it is regularly on the show to build a kitchen? Because just about every restaurant guest we have over here comes in and says, oh my gosh, I really underestimated the cost of the hoods and the grease trap and all the stainless steel equipment. Like, how bad was it to go in and take an old building downtown and turn it into something that was not a restaurant into Taboo?
It was pretty bad. We didn't think it was going to take that much money. Good thing Rio Nuevo did help us with a little bit of on grants and stuff like that. So that helped us, but it was pretty hard.
What kind of dollars roughly went into a remodel like that?
Let's say 1.5.
Yeah, that's a serious number over there. I mean, that's generational level wealth almost, right?
Yeah.
To go in and convert something that wasn't food service into it. It's why you see so many restaurateurs often just go into second or third or fourth generation restaurants. And people say, well, why do you take a space where a restaurant has failed before? Is that space cursed? Well, no, it's just already got a kitchen and it saves me $500,000 exactly. Or $1 million, right? I mean, this was a pretty transformative remodel. How long did this take?
2 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a long time too, as well, to go with that, not having any income coming in at all and just everything going out. No,
pretty much. The second year was the hardest, of course.
Yeah. As you get close to opening, right?
Yeah.
This is the pinch when all those expenses really start to roll in. You're paying a manager to, your sales are still zero. It's a pretty tough moment in any restaurateur's life over there.
Yeah, pretty much. The last 6 months, what you want to do is just open pretty much and just have money coming in.
Yeah, stop the bleeding, right?
Like, right.
But you don't want to open too soon. If you open without having a real polish to your product or your service, you can also get beat up and get bad reviews.
Exactly.
But Taboo's had really great reviews thus far. So, like, you must have had some experience with this. Like, give us your background. It's like, where do you come from? How did you get into the restaurant business?
So, my family owns a restaurant club down in Nogales, Sonora. So, that's where my background comes. In reality, we do have another business, which is a dealership. Most of our background is cars. So, it was kind of hard to transition from cars to food, but my family did help, so that gave us the opportunity to do good.
Well, there's a lot of salesmanship, I think, either way, both in the restaurant business and, of course, in the automotive business, right? It's a hospitality and sales-driven industry.
Correct.
But food is perishable, right? If you don't sell that Chevy this week, it's still there next week. But if you don't sell the halibut or the ceviche this week, like, what's happening over there?
Yeah.
Like, it's not sticking around, right?
Correct. The good thing is we have good people in the kitchen and stuff like that that help us direct what to do and stuff like that. So that was the good thing as well. Good chefs.
Where did you find your kitchen help?
People that we know. Good thing we have a lot of contacts and we know a lot of people, so we got help like that.
Do you have partners in the business as well?
Yeah, I have one more partner.
And so how does it feel now, 2 years or so into it? Like, when did we open over here in Taboo?
Well, we've been open for 3 years. It's been 3 years already since... it's been 1 year we've been open and then 3 years under contract.
And so with the year and some change being open, you're kind of past the COVID period and whatnot downtown. Like, how are you feeling about the environment in downtown Tucson right now?
Has a lot of movement. The only problem is, I think, with everybody... agreeing is a lot of fights downtown.
Yeah, we've seen that as a continuous problem as well too. And my understanding and working with Rio Nuevo as well too is that a number of the establishments are working on sharing these ID checking softwares and scanners that can sort of flag people as well too that have a memory to them, like a shared database. Mm-hmm. And I believe that Chelles and Highwire and Cobra and a couple others are now participating in this. Have they reached out to you about that yet?
No, because we bring a different age group, so we don't see that much. But I mean, we see it outside, not inside of our establishment. So that's a good thing about us. We don't bring the young crowd. We bring more as an older, 30 and up, which they're not that kind of crowd.
Understood, but it can still happen too. I mean, we get it even in St. Phillips Plaza. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, somebody can have, you know, a few too many adult beverages and get a little spicy over there. It happens in the nature of human service when you put 500 people or 1,000 people through a restaurant or club throughout the course of an evening. Like, gosh, you just get a little bit of everything, no?
Correct, yeah. But the good thing is we tend to stay away from that, so...
So what do you think downtown could do better to have less fights and less problems? Like, how can we as operators or the city of Tucson as stewards of the city do a better job of preventing this to create a downtown environment that's welcoming for everyone?
It's kind of hard because, I mean, in reality, it's up to whoever's drinking not to overdo it, you know? But more security, of course, is always good.
Sure, internal security helps. I've always found, Zeus, this is a tremendous challenge because here we sell alcoholic beverages. They represent a decent portion of the sales of many different restaurant bars. And obviously we want to pay the bills, so we have this financial incentive to want to sell as many alcoholic beverages as possible, but yet we have a moral standard to also not overserve people. But how do you know, right? Do I know before you walk into Taboo whether you've had 11 drinks before or whether this is your first one?
Correct. You see it if they're stumbling or the way they talk or the way they ask for the alcohol drink or whatever they're going to ask for. Some of them do become aggressive. Some of them are just talking nonsense and stuff like that. So that's how you pretty much know. But, I mean, you won't know exactly.
Yeah, I've always found it to be such a challenge because the part of the success of the downtown ambiance is the fact that there's a lot of happening bars and restaurants like Taboo down there. And you could go and park and maybe go enjoy two or three places. Hey, let's stop in for an appetizer over here and then let's go for a drink over there. And that's kind of how I see a lot of the traffic moving through downtown is this bit of restaurant and bar hopping. And that's neat, and it provides that awesome experience that I think the guests want in the course of an evening to have.
Correct.
An enjoyable experience in two or three or four establishments. The problem is that we're only seeing you for one or two drinks, and we don't know whether you're the engine car on that train or whether you've come in as the caboose on the back end. And I think that makes a lot of challenges.
It does, but I mean, it's part of the industry, right?
Without a doubt. So are you happy so far in the restaurant industry?
Yes, we are happy, definitely. We having a lot of Tucson people giving us their help pretty much. So we're happy on that part.
I one of the things I love about the Tucson restaurant scene is how all the local restaurants stick together, even if we're competitors in some capacity. If a even a chain, a Sullivan's came to me from across the street and they were like, hey, we're out of napkins or we're out of straws or we need this or that. Like, we're the first ones. They'd be like, here you go, man. Oh, you need a bag and box of Coke syrup? Like, help yourself. Like, take it and get it back to me later. Oh, you need a tank of gas? And it's so neat to see the local operators stick together where we may be competitors on the playing field, but behind the scenes, we're actually friends and can break bread together.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the neatest things about the industry as well, too. Well, we're going to have another segment or two with Jesus or Zeus coming up over here. We've also got some great other restaurant tours popping up later on the show today. We're going to bring on Mobeen Moslem, owner of the Saddle Restaurant, and Tucson Foodie coming up around the 8:30 hour as well, too. So don't go anywhere. You're listening to Zeus Sayans and Grant Kruger on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m. Your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Always excited to be here with you on Wednesday morning, 7 to 9 a.m. Every weekday, 7 to 9 a.m., we bring you The Morning Voice. You've got Lydia Aranda on Mondays. She's always got exciting topics. You've got Ted Maxwell on Tuesdays in his engagement hour. Ted brings in heavy-hitting politicians and civic leaders. On Wednesdays, you get me, a bit of food for thought, the intersection of business and politics here and restaurants in Tucson. On Thursdays, you've got Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. And on Fridays, Dr. Ed Ackerley from the University of Arizona, bringing you wonders and all the neat things happening on the campus of the U of A, where my daughter happens to be in week two right now at the U of A. She called me yesterday in tears that she had to spend $16, Matt, doing her laundry. And although I felt bad for the tears, I actually was like, you know what? It's amazing to see that it doesn't just self-fold and end up in your drawers like this, that there's actually some work behind
and,
this.
And we've attached a monetary value to the process. So that's good.
Yes, life lessons everywhere at the University of Arizona. And Ed Ackerley is bringing you wonders like that. And I have certainly enjoyed the wonders thus far with my daughter in the dorms at the University of Arizona. But we're joined again in studio by Zeus Sayans. He's the owner of Taboo Latin Fusion Restaurant on Congress downtown. Welcome back, Zeus.
Thank you.
Hey, so why the downtown location? Like, why the Gus Taylor building specifically? What drew you guys to that spot where you said, that, my friend, is a winner. That's where we want to put millions of dollars to start our restaurant.
Well, that pretty much was the only thing open for the concept that we wanted to. And it had enough room and space and all that. That's why.
How many square feet, more or less, is the Taboo space?
It's about 6,000?
Yeah, it's a big space. I mean, it's deep. Those downtown locations don't look as big from the frontage because they're narrow, but they're deep, and they go back a long way.
That is a nice-looking space. I'm following along a Taboo
Taboo Bar Tucson.
Yep. T-A-B-U. That's a beautiful space you got there.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's really great. And this is one of the hottest restaurants downtown right now, too, Matt. You go on weekends and this place is popping off over there right now. And that's a really great thing because you don't see that success always come from people that don't necessarily start with a big background in restaurants. But you had some family help there from Nogales. Your family owns a dealership in Nogales specifically or here in Tucson as well?
The dealership is here in Tucson. The name is Top Gear Auto on Prince and Flowing Wells right there.
Okay, very cool.
And the restaurant is in Nogales.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So a really interesting combination of the car and restaurant business. I'm trying to think of racking my brain if I can think of any other restaurant.
There was Hot Rods out in Vail.
There was Hot Rods out in Vail, but that one was like really connected to like a garage where they were like working on it. Like that sort of Cervezas like automotive theme where you know the napkins were actually shop rags like put together in a napkin ring and whatnot. Like this is a little different.
Oh,
Where you've got like the family connection in the local auto business and a local restaurant as well, too. I literally think that's a first.
I got another one for you. Pepe's Tire Shop, the erstwhile Pepe's Tire Shop and Taco Place down on South 6th. That was a great place.
Right. And I guess, you know,
not on the same par as this, but if we're doing the car restaurant fusion.
Yeah, I mean, there's been service centers and things like that turned into restaurants. That's a real challenge, too. You want to talk about an ugly phase one environmental report and, you know, trying to get through health permits to make something like that happen. But I can think of that service center that's now, I think, the ATL Wings location, right? They were on the show back a while back as well, too. And then there's Ugly But Honest Pizza as well, too, right? That was a car dealership in the Five Points area, just opened up.
Carriage House.
Yeah.
Okay. Was a dealership.
Look at that.
Hey, look at us.
We're putting it together over here. I like it. On the fly. So you thought this was the one, like this was the location, 128 East Congress. This is the south side of Congress, right?
Yes.
And this was it. Like, you've got a lot of competition in that neck of woods, though, too, right? There's an awful lot of restaurants around you. What did you do to be different? How did you differentiate Taboo's menu from other restaurants on Congress?
Just picking the drinks, trying to have something that the downtown doesn't have, putting the live music on Sundays as well, that brings different crowd that other bars have.
So on your webpage, right, it says Taboo Bar, Latin Fusion and Tequila Mixology. Give me a rundown of what you're doing with like tequila and mezcal to differentiate the product.
We just picked the different drinks from Mexico Dev and stuff like that and have different mixes here in Tucson. We try to have a lot of variety for tequila and mezcal. That way we can offer things that Tucson doesn't have.
I love it. But there's definitely a lot of Mexican restaurants in Tucson. No secret, right? I've got a Mexican restaurant as well, too. Like there, I feel like we've all got one somewhere over here. So like, what's the formula that you found to be successful to differentiate yourself from, say, an El Charro down the street or a Chela's or something where there's you know, heavy-hitting competition? Some of those names have been around for a long time as well.
Correct. Yeah. It's pretty much all that comes down to the service and the food. Try to serve different things. I mean, we all serve the same thing, the chimichanga and stuff like that. Just trying to make it fun and have a different taste, of course.
You found a lot of success in nightlife, though, too, as well, right? Like, there's a good bar draw to Taboo. Like, it's sexy. Like, this is a nice-looking restaurant.
Yes, definitely. So the idea started as just a club. But then we had the space for the kitchen because the space is pretty big. So we decided to bring the kitchen in. But our license is actually for a club.
Right. So you've got the Series 6 license, like the bar license. So like what we have at the Maverick, where you're like not legally required to sell food, like a restaurant license would be. For the listeners out there, a restaurant license would be required to sell 40% food.
Correct.
As part of their gross to keep that license. And it's a much easier and less expensive license to get. There tend not to be a lot of protests for a restaurant license, right? Everybody wants a restaurant near their house. It's an amenity. But not everybody wants a bar necessarily.
Exactly.
And so like they can be a little more challenging to do. Not so much in the downtown area. There seems to be pretty much an acceptance on Congress Street, right, that there's going to be happening bars. And in fact, I think that sort of rising tide raises all ships down there, where there's just enough successful bars that you could Uber down there and enjoy an evening with your friends.
Correct.
What are the busiest nights of the week right now for Taboo? Like, where are the hot times to go check this one out?
Definitely is Saturdays at night after 9, and then Sundays live music. We have live music. It starts at 4.
Oh, that's great. What kind of bands do you have come play on Sundays?
It's more Latin. They do play all kinds of songs, English, Spanish, and all that. And it's pretty nice. We have a lot of people in.
Very cool. Being so close to the Rialto, do you see a lot of traffic on those concert days as well, too, like
yes,
coming in?
Yes, we definitely do. We try to have the live music whenever they're doing their own concerts. That way we can have the people and have some entertainment for them.
Yeah, I've always felt like that Rialto was such a great draw downtown because you get a different demographic group every time they do a show, right? It's
correct.
It's 1,100, 1,200 people. And one day it could be bluegrass and the next day it could be rock and Espanol and the next day it could be death metal or something.
Right.
And like you just get such a varied crowd with that live music that I think it brings a lot of people to downtown.
Also the Fox Theater and Tucson Convention Center.
Yeah, I think both of those ones as well, too. The Fox, I'm really interested, Susan, in that Fox remodel to see how they're going to really grow that, because their idea is to have this rooftop bar. I mean, if you've seen the plans of that, it is grandiose. Like, this is a serious, serious development.
Tucson, downtown is going to grow pretty quick, and they have a lot of ideas. There's another bar coming in soon, I believe, right in front of us. It's also a Mexican place, I believe.
Yeah? Which location is that one?
Right by Sunrock, where Sunrock used to be.
Ah, okay. I had heard that they might be trying to go country there as well, too.
Not sure.
Trying to get the hot gossip over right. here from Zeus Sains, owner of Taboo Restaurant, their Latin fusion and tequila mixology over here. Certainly downtown has been a hot spot, but it's come really with a lot of help from Rio Nuevo, right? Rio Nuevo Correct. Is a tax increment financing group that's helped fund sales tax creating businesses downtown. Without getting into the exact numbers, can you talk about some of the help that Rio Nuevo has provided to you guys and to other restaurants to help make them possible?
Well, besides the grant they gave us and all that, they started making their own meetings there and stuff like that. So that helped us a lot. And they introduced us to the right people as well.
That's fantastic. It's great to have an incubator group like this go out and help restaurants and create businesses in areas like that Gus Taylor building that, quite frankly, were empty. Like, how long was that building empty before you guys came in there?
At least 20 years.
Yeah, 20 years, guys. Like, that's a couple decades of this business not being rented, not creating tax, not creating employees. How many staff members do you have at Taboo right now?
We have about 20.
Okay. Yeah, think about like all those jobs that wouldn't exist and all that sales tax that hadn't existed out of that building in literally 2 decades. So it's pretty amazing to see that redevelopment and all these great new businesses like this pop up. Why don't we take a quick break over here and get a word in from some of our great sponsors. And we're going to have one more segment with Zeus Sains, owner of Taboo Restaurant in downtown Tucson. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Zeus and Grant on 10:30 a.m. The Morning Voice. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I've got one final segment with Zeus Sains. He's the owner of Taboo Restaurant, Latin Fusion, and Tequila Mixology. They're located at 128 East Congress downtown. Welcome back, Zeus.
Thank you.
Hey, so we were talking about downtown economic development before the break and Rio Nuevo helping out new restaurants. There's some other things coming up down the street pretty soon too, right? This Johnny Gibson's remodel in some capacity. The guys from Highwire are putting in some pretty big bucks into that space as well too, no?
Yes.
So what do you know about that? Any hot gossip for us?
Not really. I haven't heard much.
Oh, I'm trying to get the tea over here in Tucson, right. As they say, to get the latest gossip of what's happening over there. I'd love to see that one redeveloped, as it was so neat to have a market downtown for a while, and such a disappointment to see that one not make it and not come to fruition. And then, of course, as well, too, to see the Starbucks pop up on the Chicago Music Store space. I really feel like that is just such a beautiful, cool space that really deserved to also have a great local restaurant like a Taboo popping in there as well, too, rather than just a Starbucks pickup. But, you know, it's a wish list. It's tough to do. I mean, not everyone's capacitated to just come out and put seven figures into a restaurant like that. That's a big risk.
Correct. I agree to it.
So how's it going so far for you guys?
It's going good. Summer hit us, but it wasn't that bad like we thought.
What would you do differently now, like a couple years into this experience? Like, if you knew what you know today, what would you do differently?
Probably bring more live entertainment, something different that downtown doesn't have.
I get it. We do a lot of live entertainment in St. Phillips Plaza and at the Maverick, because I personally feel, and this is opinion hat here that I'm wearing, I personally feel that experiential part is something you can't order from Uber Eats or Grubhub or Postmates or DoorDash, right? You have to come in and experience that. And we need, and you, I would assume, probably need to in Taboo, you need people to come in probably far more than you need a to-go order to come out the door, right?
I agree.
Right? Like, that's where you sell beverages, alcoholic and non-alcoholic. And those are big margins in the restaurant business.
I agree.
So where do you and your family like to go out then? If you've got a date night out here somewhere, like, give me a local restaurant that...
One of my favorites is Locale on Broadway and Alvernon. And then the other, another one is Parrish.
Oh, yeah, the Parrish does a great job. You know, I was really disappointed that the Parrish closed down that Delta space in the former Llanos over there. Mm-hmm. You know, it was neat. It was edgy. It was really just a downtown Parrish in a rebrand. And they've been so successful up at the Parrish. And to see that one not work downtown was pretty heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe anybody's gone into that space yet either.
No, not yet.
What do you think it was? Why did they not make it, do you think, in your mind? Because that's a pretty well-heeled, well-successful restaurant.
I think
there.
It was their concept. It wasn't the same as the Parrish over there on Orange Grove.
You think it should have just been the Parrish 2?
I believe so.
Downtown Parrish? Urban Parrish?
Yeah.
It would have made it. Maybe. You know, you may not be wrong in some capacity. It's always tough in Tucson because we worry that we're not big enough to support 5 or 6 or 7 of the same store, right? Mm-hmm. When you look at an Oso Brewery or a Vig or something like that in Phoenix, they just stamp them out. And here's my Gilbert one, and here's my Chandler one, and here's my Scottsdale one. But can we do that in Tucson? Like, is there enough of Tucson to go around to support, you know, this same restaurant stamped out 4, 5, 6, 7 times?
I believe so, yes.
I mean, you see it, like, I guess, in some cases on the Mexican front, right? There are charros that exist all over town, right? There's an east side charro, a northwest side charro. There's a downtown charro. There's a charro chica. I always tease with Ray that one day there's going to be a charro burguesa or something around here, you know? But so it can be done, but it's not an easy thing to do in a smaller market like Tucson because you worry that your store or that it's cannibalizing your other one as well, too. If you put it too close, too similar, or all you're doing is taking your clients from the east side and now they're just going to your central location, but you didn't create any new business. You're just splitting your clients between the two. And I've always found that to be a real challenge as well, too. Mm-hmm. Do you guys think you would do a second restaurant? Any talk in the same family over here about Taboo 2 or, you know, a different location somewhere?
We have talked about it, but we're not ready yet.
Where do you think you'd go? If like, suddenly you felt ready and, like, Taboo is packed and crushing it and the cash registers are humming and you're like, I would do a second restaurant in Tucson, where would you park it?
Somewhere by Northside.
Northside. I like it. Little St. Phillips Plaza action over there. You know, we can talk about it.
No, not really. More towards Sower Valley and stuff. More as a bar, chill bar than anything else.
I think there's a lot of demand for growth in that area. I've talked to both the Oro Valley and the Marana Chamber of Commerce who've been heavily looking for other restaurants. And I hypothesize, and maybe this is true, maybe it's not, but I hypothesize that we don't get the bar growth out there because of lack of population density. Right? Like a wealthy older constituency that goes to bed early and aggressive DUI enforcement.
True. But also Marana is growing a lot.
Yeah. I think too, that's going to be a spot where we're going to see pretty significant restaurant growth over the next few years. If you stuck a gun in my head and said, pick the next winner out there, I think it's that northwest side in Marana.
I agree. There's coming also, they're doing some downtown Marana, something big.
They're supposed to have a number of local restaurants on there and kind of create like a Western facade. And there's supposed to be these like big new like neon cowboy or something visible from the freeway as well too. Mm-hmm. That's Scott Steitler and Rudy Dabdub and crew, right? That are doing that one. The same guys that brought us the AC Marriott and are bringing us the Moxie downtown as well. So wishing those guys a whole lot of success over there because they've invested an awful lot of money downtown and sounds like they're investing an awful lot of money in Marana as well too.
Yeah.
Well, we've only got a minute, some change left in the segment. Why don't you break down for our listeners one more time, Zeus, about where they can find and interact with Taboo Restaurant?
We're located in Taboo, 128 East Congress Street, downtown, right next to Starbucks.
And your website?
TabooTucson.com.
And Instagram as well, too? Are you on any other social media?
That's T-A-B-U.
Yes.
T-A-B-U, yeah, so yes.
Thank you, Matt. Appreciate that. And where'd you guys come up with that name, Taboo?
I got it from Cancun.
Yeah, was there like a cool bar down there somewhere that had that?
It's just written T-A-B-O-O.
So you took the O-O, turned it into a U?
Yeah.
No copyright violation over there. I like it. Well played. That's good. That's great. Well, listeners, go out there and check out Taboo. If you've got a hankering for a downtown
spot
to go check
out. It's a beautiful space. We're going to go and check it out. I just perusing the website. It's
beautiful. We hope to see you there.
Yeah, there's a lot of really great, like, old school buildings that have been refurbished into to sexy restaurant and nightclubs, like what you did over there, Zeus. I salute you. I congratulate you on your success thus far, and really appreciate you just coming out and spending part of your Wednesday with us here on The Morning Voice.
Thank you.
Thank you. And listeners, don't go anywhere. We've got a whole nother hour of Morning Voice coming up after the break. We're going to bring in Mobeen Moslem, owner of the Saddle Restaurant. Him and his executive chef are going to call in. And on the second half of the hour, we're going to have Tucson foodie Shane Reiser talking about Sonoran Restaurant Week. Don't go anywhere. Lots more food talk coming up after the break. You're listening to Grant Kruger on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m., your home for local news and talk.
A reminder, you can follow us on Facebook or YouTube. 1030 The Voice is the Facebook page. And on YouTube, it's 1030 The Voice for the YouTube channel. We'll see you there.
Welcome back to The Morning Voice for Hour 2. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. We're always bringing you great live business and restaurant talk over here for your morning drive. And I certainly appreciate you taking time out of your Wednesday morning to spend with me. This happens to be one of the slower weeks in the restaurant business of the entire year. I would venture to say that yesterday is the Tuesday after Labor Day might actually be the slowest restaurant day in Tucson of the entire calendar year.
No
kidding. When you go post the Tuesday post Memorial Day or the Tuesday after Labor Day, tend to be, you know, after a 3-day holiday, everybody has barbecued. They've taken that extra day. We even have a banger of a day on the Sunday night before because that Monday is a banking or school holiday and everyone's got it off. It's almost like an extra Saturday. Yeah. But by the time you get to that Tuesday, rather than being like an extra Saturday, it's almost like an extra Monday.
So it's this lull after everything gets going because of the students back in town.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, September has historically been the slowest restaurant month of the entire calendar year for us in pretty much all 15 years that we've been open at Union Hospitality Group. But I do say that this is a great time of year to open a restaurant, right? You come at the absolute slowest time. If you could time it and get your restaurant open like literally yesterday on like the slowest day of the entire year, it's a perfect start for you. You want a slow start. You want a soft opening, and you could get 4 to 6 weeks to kind of get your act together before, say, that second week of October when things do get a little spicy. As we talked about a bit last week and the week before, there's still a couple restaurant openings popping up around town. Bird Kitchen is finally open, and the reviews thus far are pretty good. They've opened up in the former Flores Market / Rincon Market space, right? 6th Street and Tucson, so right next to where Bob Dobbs is. And so now there's quite a bit of local restaurant bar. You've essentially got Bob Dobbs, and then you've got Sonoran House, which is far more than the original Sonoran House. This has got a bar restaurant component to it now, too. Mm. And then you've got Red Bird right next to that. So essentially, there's three sort of new American-y restaurant bars going on all inside of this same block now. And then right across the street, you've got Borderlands, the last remaining Borderlands. And while certainly I don't want to call a death watch on the Borderlands over here, I have a feeling that they're bringing a knife to a gunfight right now against two well-heeled and new operators in a far more visible space that's got substantially more parking as well, too. And so I wish all of those guys all the success in the world. We'll get Sergio back on from Redbird. He was on about a year ago or so on our show from the OG Redbird. I didn't want to bother him this week on our restaurant opening. As you can imagine, that's a kind of a stressful time in someone's life over here. But in the next couple of weeks, we'll get him to take a stab at coming on the show and telling us about what it was like to open up in the former Flores Market and Rincon Market space over there in Sam Hughes. I bet they're going to have a lot of success in that neighborhood. I think that people will be really excited to see that one popping up as well, too. And as well, 313 Pizza, getting good reviews thus far. It's an online-only concept done by Renee's Organic Oven folks on the east side. They're doing
good folks.
313pizzaandconies.com. For those that aren't paying attention, 313 happens to be the area code from my hometown of Detroit, Michigan. And so they're bringing Detroit-style pizza. This is the same thing that Transplant Pizza did or still does on their Speedway location. Think that really thick crust pizza that has cheese, brick, Wisconsin brick cheese, all the way to the edge of the pie, cooked in cast iron pans, lined with lard, if you're doing it right, at least, like creating a delicious, crispy edge to the pizza. And so they're bringing recipes brought to you by like Buddy's Pizza, like a real famous pizzeria in Detroit that did that style. I think you could even like buy Buddy's Pizza at Costco, like frozen, in the same way you could buy White Castle or something like this. But they're bringing great style Detroit pizza and Coney's. The Coney dog, of course, is sort of the official food of Detroit, Michigan, in the same way that we have Sonoran dog wars between, say, like BK and Güero Canelo. Detroit had infamous Coney dog wars between Lafayette and American Coney Island restaurants. And which one you like better says a lot about how and what you are as a person. So I'll be interested to try out 313 Pizza and Coney's. It's a pickup only concept right now, sort of done as like a ghost kitchen style out of the Renee's organic oven space over there.
So if on a Detroit style pizza, is that by definition focaccia crust or not? I didn't know if that was actually what the crust was on a Detroit style. I've seen that.
It's not up front. The Detroit style crust is supposed to ferment in the pan.
Gotcha.
And it rises. If you do it right, some places par bake them to sort of stop that fermentation. It saves money and dough that way. But you end up with like this window of time that the dough is usable because it's rising, right? It's not leavened enough. And then it hits this perfect amount. And then of course, a few hours later, it's overblown and overdone. And so you've got to pre-line those pans and sort of let that dough rise if you're going to cook it the correct way, at least for this Detroit style pizza. And the sauce goes on top as well too, Matt. So it's cheesed all the way to the edge, and then you do stripes of sauce over the top as opposed to underneath the cheese. So a little bit different style over there. So
thanks
excited,
for making me hungry, Grant.
Excited to see that one popping up over here in the old Pueblo. As a former Detroiter, still near and dear to my heart, the Motor City, let's go give those guys a try. A local crack at Detroit Pizza and Coney Dogs with the 313pizzaandconeys.com. As well, as we talked about, tailgate time popping up for sure. At the first hour, we were discussing the U of A's Bear Down Bash. It's going to be catered, of course, by the C. Charo restaurants. And there's local bands playing pretty much every home tailgate at that Bear Down field. So do go check those out. That's something we're really looking for a lot of support for in the U of A as we start to develop a new and different tailgate culture and ways to get the public's interest in the football program as well too. Of course, one of the ways to get the public's interest in the football program is to win football games. I'm no expert at this over here, but I'm going to suggest that winning games.
I'm but a humble restaurateur, but
but bringing a winning product on the field often brings a winning product in the cash registers as well. In some capacity, we've got Weber State coming in town this week. There's not even a spread on that particular game, Matt, because I think them being an FCS school, which is the lower league of college sports, that right now they haven't even put a spread on the board, but I'm guessing we're going to be 30 plus point favorites. This is a team that got whipped at the end of last season 27-6 by NAU and their division. So just to put that one into context, this should be a healthy win for our program. As well, starting up tomorrow is a pop-up taqueria on University and Park. I wouldn't normally bring up just a small pop-up taqueria over here on our show, but this one is El Califa de Leon, and this was a Michelin-starred taqueria out of Mexico City that's essentially got a food tour going on where they're doing these taco pop-ups in different cities, bringing their Michelin-starred tacos. And they were the first sort of, you know, taqueria to get a God-honest Michelin star, which is, you know, kind of the highest honor, of course, that can be bestowed upon a restaurant. Michelin, of course, was a French company. They also created tires. And the story goes that Michelin stars came from the Michelin's company's desire to create tourist points of interest, mapping out restaurants in France so that people would use up their tires more quickly traveling between all these recommended restaurants.
Keane's demand stimulation model.
Correct.
Like,
so if you wish to put some wear and tear on your tires, you could make your way down to University Boulevard starting tomorrow. And for the next 10 days, Califa de Leon is going to be located in that corner location right on Park and University, south I want to say southwest corner. It had most previously been a Greek restaurant for a number of years. And so think like right on that southwest corner of Park and University, they're having a pop-up and you can get yourself Michelin-starred tacos for the next 10 days at Park and University. And so that one may be worth a look to go see if the hype is worth it or not over there. But this is a famous Mexico City taqueria that's sort of doing a big public, you know, nationwide tour, and they're popping up all over the country. Well,
you
to
keep
bring
us
their
in the
fare.
Know on this stuff, so Grant.
I'm trying to get the hot gossip over here. I was trying to get it out of Zeus over there as well, too. I'm always looking.
You were looking for line dancing downtown. That's what you were looking for.
Well, you know, we want to see what's happening down there. Someone's going to bring a little urban cowboy action and compete with the Maverick. Again, the space to do Western has to look the part. It's got to feel the part. I don't think you can just take a regular old sports bar and turn it country. Like a lot of places have tried, right? They play the music. They put on a music video, you know, have the employees dress up in flannels and cowboy hats or something for one day of the week. But I don't think it works that way. I think that in that level of business, you've got to be the part all the time to be authentic, to be real country. And it's one of the reasons we just don't see that downtown yet, is there just isn't a location that looks and feels as country as it needs to be to really make that one happen yet. But we're going to bring on, speaking of university and Michelin-starred food and all the delicious things you can get down by campus, when we come back after the break, I'm going to bring on Mobeen Muslim and Justin Stewart. They're the owner and executive chef of the Saddle Restaurant on University. They've recently rebranded their restaurant bar that was known as Bourbon Bent into the Saddle and are going to bring us some awesome Western flair and Western food over here as well, too. So don't go anywhere. A fascinating conversation with the owner of the Saddle Restaurant coming up right after the break. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Love talking local restaurants with you over here. Before the break, we were talking about local country bars and whether there was going to be something downtown country, but there happens to be something on University Boulevard right now, country. We're going to have a little country talk from one country bar and restaurant owner to another. Welcome Mr. Mobeen Muslim, owner of the Saddle Restaurant on University. Good morning.
Good morning, Grant. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks so much for coming on The Morning Voice today. I bet you guys are pretty excited for the students to be returning down there on University, no?
Super pumped. You could just feel the energy level just, you know, increase, and the atmosphere is amazing, and it's just really fun to have football back in and the students back on campus. It's a great experience.
Without a doubt. Why don't you break down for our listeners where your restaurant is located exactly?
Awesome. Thanks, Grant. So, yeah, we're the Saddle, located at 820 East University Boulevard, right in the heart of Main Gate Square. We're, I would say, north of Gentle Bend's and west of some of the old staples like Frog and Firkin and No Anchovies. Right in the middle of Main Gate Square.
As our resident restaurant historian, that place has formerly housed Pasco. It was Ramiro Scavo's restaurant. And before that, many moons ago, was Cafe Paraiso, if I remember correctly.
That is correct. It's we still get people that come in and ask about Ramiro and Pasco. And I believe even years before that, it may have been a local coffee establishment, too. And some people ask about that also. It's a very cool building. It's a historic building. And so, it's got a lot of history to it.
Yeah, those buildings have a lot of character down there, right? Owned by the Marshall Foundation. It was originally a hotel, if I remember correctly, too, right? At some point, it was like the Geronimo Hotel.
That's correct. Yeah, and it's you can see there was a bunch of villas around that was used for the hotels, and it's really cool. You know, sometimes it gives us some obstacles because there's not a lot you can do with historic buildings, but still a lot of great history behind it.
Without a doubt. Well, you've done a pretty transformative change to that particular restaurant space over there, both as Bourbon Bent as your previous operation, and now as the Saddle too. Break down the Saddle concept for me a bit.
Yeah, so the Saddle is a modern country concept where I really wanted that southern charm to meet that college town energy. And the mission there is just to make it a space that's welcoming for locals, students, even travelers if you're just looking to get some great food, strong drinks, and some unforgettable nights. And so we have a little bit of everything, but the main focus right now is our food and then awesome game day atmospheres. We even have karaoke night for some of the students to come down and you know sing their hearts out. So really cool atmosphere that we built there with the Saddle.
Without a doubt. Now, there's only 7 home games, I think, this year as well, too. And I know those days are really popping over there. What do you do to drive the energy on the non-game days? Because that's another 358 days of the year.
Yeah, that's a great question. So we focus on many things throughout the week. It starts with Thursday nights. We love to do our karaoke. We get a lot of great demand for that. High energy students love to have fun with that and enjoy karaoke. Then we move into Saturdays. Saturdays we are really sports driven, so we open up early on Saturdays for actually soccer. We're one of the few places that open up 7 a.m. and show a lot of the soccer events.
Oh, so you're doing English Premier League games and stuff then,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, English Premier League. Yep, we have a fun Chelsea group, supporters that come in and support us. So that's been really great. And then on Sundays, we're also a local Buffalo Bills bar for the T-Town Mafia backers. And so that's some of the things we're doing with some of the local sporting groups to help drive some traffic into.
That's awesome. I've always wanted to open early for the English Premier League stuff. I'm a big fan. I'm an Arsenal guy myself, in full disclosure. But I've always found it so difficult to open up a restaurant back at 7 in the morning when you were just open at 2 a.m. the night before, which meant you were cleaning up till 3:30 or 4 or 5 a.m. And by the time you think about cleaning and prep, like, that's a vicious turnaround time, no?
It is. It really is. But, thank goodness we have a great staff, and they're really dedicated, and they want to see the place succeed. And so everybody contributes and make sure that, they're doing their part to make sure that we're ready for the next day also.
How many team members do you have right now working for you at the Saddle?
We have about 15 team members that work for us. So that's another reason why it's a little easier for us to have that turnaround. We're not as a big of a space. But we have 15 team members all dedicated to see us succeed.
Awesome. So you were telling me before the show over here about your new executive chef, Justin Stewart. What kind of culinary fare is he whipping up over here for us?
Justin is an amazing chef. He's very experienced. And what he's done with the Saddle, he's brought his vision where he's created an elevated, fresh Southwest cuisine. And, our features are around flame-grilled meats. We have a lot of handcrafted sauces, some fresh salads, loaded burgers. Man, the jalapeno popper burger is by far my favorite. And we have a few signature entrees. And the main thing here is it's all from scratch, packed with bold flavor, just like Justin wanted it to. So it's a really cool menu, delicious, and I'm really excited about it.
I love it, man. That sounds great. You guys have some specific drink specials or anything for the college kids to lure them from the even bigger restaurant bars right next door? Like, what's the game plan there?
Yeah, so we have a couple things there. We serve a lot of our cocktails in boots. So we have boot-shaped containers that will carry our boots, and we have a couple signature drinks that go in there, and the students love that also. And then another thing that sets us apart from everybody else, we also have a wheel that the people, the locals, love to spin and to help them determine what drink or what experience they're going to take part in. It could be putting on a funny party animal hat. It could be riding a saddle. So different things like that to add to the experience also.
I love it. That sounds like a really great time over there at the Saddle. Where'd you come up with that name?
The Saddle, I wanted to create, I wanted it to still be country theme after Bourbon Bent. And so I wanted something short and sweet because, with the college students, everything has to be short and sweet, almost like an Instagram video, really quick. And so I decided to just go with the Saddle there.
I love it. I think it's descriptive and works. There is a Silver Saddle Steakhouse. You're going to have to work to differentiate yourself.
Yep.
From the Silver.
Yep, no, that's correct. And that's, a lot of emphasis and resources are going to towards my Google SEO and those type of things to help us differentiate from that, too.
Yeah, I get it. There's a union in San Diego, and I still get people all the time that are like, hey, is that your new place in San Diego? What are you doing on the beach over there? And I'm like, I wish, brother. I got a ways to go before we get to that one, I think.
It's a struggle that I know we're going to deal with an obstacle, but we'll be ready for it also.
I love it. So how's the vibe down there on university right now, like with this first week and a half of students being back?
It was amazing. It really, you can feel the difference, see the difference. There's an excitement on the block. And it's really cool. You know, all of us, restaurant owners on the university, we collaborate together to try to make an experience for all the students, whether it's through our bar crawls or just offering specials for all of them to come out and have a great time. So it's really fun.
I love it. We just had at the first hour, Zeus Sains, the owner of Taboo Restaurant, and we were talking about how all the restaurateurs, even though we may do battle on the business playing field outside of that, we're actually like all friends and like root for each other over here. And that's coming from one country bar and restaurant owner to another.
Oh, absolutely. And we have that same support on University Boulevard also. And you've been great yourself offering me resources. And it's a great community that we have. Little things simple as last week we shared a reel about the saddle and, you know, it's coming and it's here. And Gentle Benz took the video and shared it to their 30,000 followers. So it's really cool to see that collaboration and support on the block.
I love it. And we love Rich from Gentle Benz. He's been on multiple times here on the show with us as well, too. We've only got about a minute left, Mobeen. Why don't you break down for our listeners where they can interact with the saddle, your Facebook, web pages, all that good stuff.
Hey, absolutely. Thanks. So our website is thesaddleaz.com. You can find our menu, make reservations there, see what we're all about. And our Instagram handle is the same also, thesaddleaz, where you can see a lot of the great content and live footage that we have, some of our food pictures. So I would suggest everybody going on there. And Grant, if I may, I just want to say, you know, thank you for having us on this platform. You've always been a leader in the restaurant industry, and the fact that you always help us navigate through this tough industry with support and resources is amazing. So thank you to you also.
Now, thank you for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us, Mobeen. It's Mobeen Muslim, owner of The Saddle. Go visit these guys. They're over at 820 University. They've got some great Western fare for you from Chef Justin Stewart. Thank you, Mo, for spending part of your Wednesday with us.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
Don't go anywhere, listeners. We've got a whole nother half an hour of food talk coming up. We're going to bring on, after the break, Mr. Shane Reiser, Tucson foodie. We're going to be talking Sonoran Restaurant Week. You're listening to Grant Kruger on 1030 AM The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. You know, as always, we love just these interviews with local restaurateurs over here, like guys and girls putting it all out there on the line, opening up their dreams and their own establishments. It's so neat to see.
Putting a mill and a half on the table and say, bet it all on red. Good for him, man.
I feel blessed to even sit in the same room with all these guys and girls over here and just love talking local food with everybody. But as much as I know about the local food scene, my next guest over here has more local food knowledge on his little finger than I pretty much got in my entire adult body over here. I'd like to welcome the Tucson foodie, Mr. Shane Reiser. Good morning, Shane.
Good morning.
Hey, thanks so much for taking part of your Wednesday to come on The Morning Voice with me.
Hey, thanks for having me on here, man. I'm excited to talk about Restaurant Week.
Yeah, let's do it. So Sonoran Restaurant Week coming up in just a couple days over here. Why don't you give us the high-level breakdown for our listeners that don't know what Sonoran Restaurant Week is and is all about.
It's my favorite time of year. Every big city deserves a Restaurant Week, and Tucson's got one, and we run it. It's just an awesome opportunity to explore locally owned restaurants. So it starts on Friday. It runs for 10 days. So we've got this weekend and all week and next weekend. And there's over 120 restaurants participating. And what these restaurants do is they put together a fixed price menu for you that shows off the best of what they have to offer. And they do it at a discount, at least 20%. Some restaurants go above and beyond that. So you've got 120 restaurants all around Tucson, north, east, south, et cetera, offering great deals. And all you have to do is walk in and say, can I get the Sonoran Restaurant menu? And you're going to get a 3-, 4-, 5-course meal. And it's going to be delicious and it's going to be at a discount. So the whole idea is to, you know, just give locals and visitors an opportunity to explore new restaurants. Because, you know, a lot of people get stuck in that same routine of their favorite 3, 4, 5 restaurants. So this is a chance to get out, try all the amazing restaurants that Tucson has to offer, which is a ton, like you always say in your show. And it comes at a time when restaurants need some extra love. You know, September is a bit of a slow month for restaurants. So this is a big economic boon for Tucson, and it helps Tucson restaurants get through a tough season.
Without a doubt. Before the break, we were talking, and maybe you heard or not, but we were just saying how September is essentially the slowest month of the entire calendar year for the Tucson restaurant scene. And that's surprising to a lot of people, right? Especially when we just talked to some of the guys that were downtown and on university, that you would think, well, the students have returned. Why is it that September is so slow?
Well, the snowbirds aren't back yet. They're starting to trickle in, but a lot of them haven't returned. It's still hot.
Oh, yeah. I would agree.
And, you know, students, I don't know if you, I'm surprised that students don't do this, but they don't get out a whole lot. They kind of go down Fourth Avenue, Congress, stuff with the Sunlink, stuff that's walkable or a short distance from the university. So the restaurants down on University Avenue, they're feeling a lot better now that the students are back, but all the restaurants everywhere else are still struggling quite a bit. So
no, without a doubt. One other fault I always bring up, even though I help promote it all the time, is the University of Arizona itself. Because in September, we have so many home football games, often on Saturdays. And Saturdays are our busiest day of the week. You might do a third or 40, even 45% of your weekly sales on Saturday alone. There's a very inequitable distribution in terms of when people show up. And so when you take a home football game, a big, awesome party like the university is throwing, and bless them for doing it, I enjoy those things too, you're taking 60, 70,000 of some of the wealthier, more influential Tucsonans and putting them not inside of Tucson's local restaurant scene.
Yeah, that's a good point. I never thought about it that way. Yeah, you're right, man.
All those things add up to really make September quite a challenge. And the patio weather as well, too, Shane, doesn't quite get good until October. It's about that second week of October that suddenly you're like, okay, like now we can sit outside. Let's go have brunch on a patio. Like September brunch on a patio, tropical storms aside, can still be pretty spicy outside. That can be pretty toasty.
Yeah, you're totally right. Yeah, and all the restaurant owners I talk to, they're still holding their breath.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to get through summer. Yep. We're going to get there. Thank God there's restaurant week, and thank God October's coming.
Yeah, I really salute you guys for putting together the Sonoran Restaurant Week, because on a statewide level, there's an Arizona Restaurant Week run by the Arizona Restaurant Association, and I work and support, of course, that group. But they've kind of always left Tucson on the back burner, and you've never seen a lot of Tucson support, advertisement, or just in general energy on Arizona Restaurant Week, and you've taken Sonoran Restaurant Week and run with it. I mean, 120 restaurants is impressive.
Well, thank you, Grant. I think Tucson deserves its own week.
So where can customers interact with Sonoran Restaurant Week? Where do you go find more information about this right now?
Well, you can go to TucsonFoodie.com, and there's a banner at the very top of every page. You can click on that. It'll take you to SonoranRestaurantWeek.com, where we've got a list of all the restaurants, all the menus they're offering. You can search. You can filter by price point. You can filter by cuisine type. You can filter by breakfast, lunch, dinner. There's a map as well. So you can.
I love this interactive map you have here on your website. If you go to it's SonoranRestaurantWeek.com or Tucson Foodie in the link for Sonoran Restaurant Week, and there's literally an interactive map where you can see the location of all 120 places that are participating right now in Sonoran Restaurant Week and map out your next 10 days.
That's right. And you know about the special dinners that we're doing as well?
Let's talk about that. Break it down for our listeners.
Well, we did this last year, so this is the second year we're doing it. It was really popular, but last year was an experiment. And we've just asked a small group of restaurants to offer a very special dinner each night, just one night of each of the 10 days of Sonoran Restaurant Week. So there's 10 special dinners happening, and you can see the lineup of those on SonoranRestaurantWeek.com. And we let restaurants do whatever we want. So these are a little higher priced dinners, but they're creative, come with drink pairings. Just an additional thing to, you know, to get more people to go to restaurants, but also just a new fun way to experience those restaurants for participants, for attendees.
No, it's always so fun to have a course meal like that because it takes away a whole lot of stress of ordering and what do you want? What am I going to get? It's just like hop in for the ride and just let the restaurant take you down a culinary journey. I'm a big fan.
I love doing that. Yep.
Yeah,
sure.
We don't. I don't think we actually have enough course meals in for the regular in Tucson over here. It's kind of unfortunate. You see it in bigger cities so much more often than you do in Tucson. You think it's just because of our aging population over here? Maybe the snowbirds don't have as big of appetites, or what do you think that? Why do you think that is?
I think restaurants are afraid to do it. The ones that do it do well. Hacienda del Sol, the Coronet, Augustan Kitchen is going to start doing wine dinners every month. They're constantly selling out. Tucson Foodie produces a dinner every month. We sell it out every time. So I think there's plenty of appetite to do more course dinners in Tucson. So I think just more restaurants need to take the chance and give it a try.
No, I love it. I think that's a great idea. I'm going to have to follow my own advice over here and look to start to offer some pairings like this even more on the regular. We're participating, of course, with Reforma Restaurant as part of the group over there. But I do think in general, like having some sort of course pairing is just a really neat way to order and really takes just a lot of that stress off of ordering off of you. Too large a menu has actually stressed me out, Shane. Like I can't go to like a Cheesecake Factory level restaurant and look at a 9-page menu with advertising. It's honestly too much.
Yeah, no, that I always have a breath of exhale when I go to a restaurant. It's like a 1-page, you know, maybe 10, 20 items. Oh, thank God. And if there's ever like just a chef's tasting or something, I'm usually like, great, just give me that because I want to experience this restaurant, whatever the chef's, you know, excited about right now. Just give me that so I can experience this restaurant. I don't have to make any decisions.
Hey, speaking of chef tastings, what do you know about this Michelin-starred taqueria popping up on University over here? Matt and I were talking about that before the break, this Califa de Leon pop-up.
I don't know too much about it. They did reach out for help promoting, and I'm starting to learn more about it. But, yeah, these are the only Michelin-star-rated tacos apparently in the world. At least that's what their email to me said. So
right.
I'm going to go try them.
Yeah, it sounds like they're going to be popping up here for 10 days in a row on University. And that's kind of an interesting landing spot for Michelin-starred food, not taking anything away from University dining, of course. But you've got to imagine they're going to be on the higher price point, right?
Oh, I don't know about that. I mean, they are just tacos. How expensive can tacos get? I guess they can get
famous last words.
Yeah, maybe we'll find out soon enough.
Yeah, we'll find out.
I'm going to expect a Tucson Foodie write-up or article about this one for sure. You guys always do such a great job at Tucson Foodie. How do you get all this hot gossip over here? I'm always trying to pull it out of the restaurateurs. Where do you get the tips?
Well, we've been around for 10 years. So a lot of restaurants reach out to us when they have news. But then we've got 20 or 30 freelance writers out there that they find out about stuff and they send us tips. We also get tips from readers. Did you know that over a third of the population reads our website every month?
Yeah, that's amazing.
So we get to get tips from readers emailed to us and Instagrammed to us. And then our chief editor, Jackie Tran, he's a chef himself. He's got his pulse, or he's got his finger on the pulse of the culinary scene here. And he also just does research. He's always looking at restaurant Facebook pages. He's looking at liquor license applications. He's looking at commercial real estate filings. So we find out about stuff all the time.
Yeah, those are some of my tips over there. I get them from like the liquor license apps and the real estate closings and lease information, because obviously that's going to tell the tale. Almost everybody wants to sell booze in some capacity if you can. And those applications have to be filed many months in advance.
Mm-hmm. And that's how a lot of restaurants make most of their money.
Without a doubt. You got time to stick around for one more short segment with me? We got to take a quick break and hear from some local sponsors.
Yes, sir. I'll be here.
Love it. All right. We're going to have one more segment with the Tucson Foodie, Mr. Shane Reiser, coming up after the break, after a word for some great local sponsors. Welcome back to our final segment of the Morning Voice. We've got one more segment with the Tucson Foodie, Mr. Shane Reiser. Welcome back to you, sir.
Hello.
Hey, thanks again for spending part of your Wednesday with us. Before the break, we were talking about Sonoran Restaurant Week and the over 120 restaurants that are going to be participating over the next 10 days. And this starts on Friday. So do get out there to Shane's website and take a peek at TucsonFoodie.com. Shane, you're always bringing the hot restaurant news over here. What are some latest, greatest openings, some great things that you and your staff have tried recently that we should know about?
Oh, man. Have you been to Sunshine Wine yet?
No, I'm familiar with Sunshine Wine. I talked about it about 2.5 months ago on the show, and I haven't had a chance to make it. They're on Broadway on the Sunshine Mile, right? And I want to say Highland area, like Broadway and Highland, Broadway
yeah,
Park.
Yeah, and in a little adobe house. It's a really adorable place. And a lot of people think it's more focused on wine, which, you know, there is a huge focus on wine, but their food is amazing. So I go there to eat. It's my new, like, favorite upscale spot.
Ooh, nice. Sunshine Wine. That's a neat little tip over there from Tucson Foodie, Mr. Shane Reiser. That's awesome. Any other hot tips on some new great places we should know about?
Well, Redbird's about to open in the old Rincon Market, or where Flora's Market Run used to be. You know, that place right next to it where the market used to be is now Sonoran House, which is Sonoran's House's second location. But Sonoran House in their first location is just a coffee shop. But they have huge plans in there. They have a dedicated chef in there. They just opened their food menu. It's a tapas restaurant. And then they took over that August Rhodes.
Right, the bakery market kind of thing.
Yeah, they took over that space too. So you can now walk back into that space. And it's not open yet, but that's going to be a speakeasy. And it's going to be a pizza spot.
Oh, wild.
So that whole building is being kind of rethought. And then Redbird, which is a very successful restaurant more on the north side or up in the foothills, is opening in that bigger space where Flora's Market Run used to be. We just posted some sneak peek photos on TucsonFoodie.com. You can see of the new restaurant. They renovated it, put some beautiful murals in there, all new seating. Looks great.
Love it. I'm really excited for those concepts to open up. I think that neighborhood over there in Sam Hughes and Blenman Elm is absolutely dying to have a winner and something a little more upscale than perhaps Bob Dobbs. And I like Bob Dobbs, don't get me wrong. There's a place in the market for that one over there. But something like one notch up the ladder over there in terms of classiness.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's already got a couple of winners over there. Tumerico, literally the best restaurant on Yelp in the country last year, which is crazy. Not even vegan restaurant. Number one restaurant on Yelp. Blows my mind. So right across the street from that. So that really should be a foodie hub, and it is turning into one.
No, I think it's going to be. When you've got Sonoran House, Redbird, Bob Dobbs, Tumerico, Borderlands probably a little shaky, you know, quite frankly, given they've closed a number of locations, and that's a tough parking spot there too.
Yeah, the new general manager that just the same Hughes spot reached out to me. He's got some plans to pick it back up. So hopefully we see some movement there.
Well, I think the rising tide raises all ships to a certain degree as well, too. You get a hot new restaurant. There's a wait for tables. You pop in to some other place and get a drink and stick around. I mean, I think that there is a synergy. Restaurants can absolutely support other restaurants around them. The market likes that.
Yeah, that's totally true. That's always been my belief, too. Rising tide lifts all boats.
Yeah, you think you want to be the only kid in town on this one, but I don't really think you do. I think it's actually great to have competition around and near you and just become, quite frankly, a food hub. And you guys are definitely the food hub of the internet over here and have your finger on the pulse of the Tucson food scene better than anybody else in the industry.
That's what we try to do, man.
Well, why don't you break down? We've only got about a minute and some change here left in this segment. Break down the Sonoran Restaurant Week one more time for our listeners.
Yeah, Sonoran Restaurant Week kicks off this Friday, September 5th through the 14th. It's 10 days. It's over 120 restaurants participating. And the whole idea is to go explore restaurants and do so by saving a little bit of money. So if you go to SonoranRestaurantWeek.com, you can browse all the restaurants. You can see who's offering lunch, breakfast, dinner. You can see the different cuisines and the price points, and you can plan your whole week. And every menu that every restaurant's offering is about a 20% or more discount off. So it's a great opportunity to support local and explore restaurants.
I love it. Get out there and support your local restaurants over here in the month of September. It is, in the sage advice from our Tucson foodie, Mr. Shane Reiser over here, the slowest restaurant month of the entire year. So if you can get out there and support, that is a great thing. Shane, thank you for spending part of your Wednesday with us here on The Morning Voice.
Thank you, Grant.
And listeners, thank you for spending part of your day with us, too. It's been a great show. We had a great opportunity to talk to a number of local restaurateurs. We had Shane Reiser, Tucson Foodie on. Stay dry out there in that rain. Looks like we could be having some tropical storms on the horizon. Right. And remember, when life gives you lemons, sometimes you got to turn them into limoncello. Thanks for listening and have a great day.